This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by Friends of the Magic Word, such as Andrew Falk, our newest member of the Friends of the Magic Word. Thank you very much, Andrew, for joining, and we appreciate your sponsorship and your support. Well, this week we're going to be talking with Armando Lucero, and I was working with him in the close-up room this past June and had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with him, usually in the dressing room. During the daytime, he was pretty much private and stayed in his room for the most part. I didn't really get out to go and break bread and have a meal with him anywhere, but we did talk quite a bit, I should say, backstage sometime. Oftentimes, he would have on his headphones, and he would be back there rehearsing, which was kind of an interesting thing, I think, and he talks a little bit about the importance of rehearsing, and he does practice a lot because he is someone who is committed to his art and realizes that this is not just a profession but a passion, and he is very serious, again, about the way that he treats this and believes the way that other people should be treating it, and we as magicians should respect the art ourselves. Not just in what we do, but also in what we say. And in this podcast, he goes into some detail about some of the words that we use that we perhaps should think twice before we do say these things. Well, you'll know what I'm talking about once that you kind of get into this. But this is, again, one of those podcasts where it was very, golly, it was great to me to have an opportunity to sit down and talk with someone like this who rarely, if ever, gives any kind of interviews at all, and particularly like for podcasts. And he was a little bit reluctant to starting out trying to decide whether he really wants to sit down and chat with me and not sure what we were going to be doing. And towards the end and at the end, he was glad. And it was, of course, a very good conversation. And I know that you guys will benefit from listening to this. As I said, there were some other past podcasts we've had that I would put this in that category, in which that it's something that certainly makes you think about magic and you'll become a better magician as a result of incorporating some of these ideas. There have been other magicians in the past whom I've spoken with that I would recommend you go back and listen to some of their podcasts also. These are more of the podcasts I would say are the, quote, heavy kind of hitters, I guess, or the guys who have a little bit heavier type of content. It wasn't just something where we're talking about events of the day, but how it is to make your magic better and stronger. Those podcasts that I recommend you go back and take a listen to another time would be like those I had recorded with Garrett Thomas. There were a couple of podcasts there that were really great. Again, they were so good that I put them into two different separate podcasts so you can actually have a chance to listen to each one separately and try to digest each one. Also with Alex Pandrea, that was another great podcast that certainly made you think. David Stone is one that I would recommend going back and listening to also. Really went a different direction. It was quite interesting, and I learned a lot from what he had to say. The one with Brad Henderson was very much like Garrett Thomas from the standpoint that that was broken up into two podcasts also, because how that he had spoken about magic as art, and I recommend going back and listening to those. Or if you haven't, go back and take a listen. And of course, Bob Fitch, who is the director of magic and magicians and has done so much in order to make a professional magician even better and their act more commercial. Robert Baxt and I had a great conversation talking about comedy, and I recommend you go back and listen to that one. Another one, Kevin James, of course, from The Illusionist, and you all know who Kevin is, and we speak about creativity. Another one to go back. These are just some off the top of my mind I was thinking of that I really enjoyed that I would recommend you might want to consider to go back to listen to a second time, or if you haven't already, listen to for the first time. You can go over to themagicwordpodcast.com, go through the archives. You can find those. Just do a search easily on your computer, or there is a search bar also on the website where that you can type in a person's name and you can find anything that we've had where we've had a conversation with those guys. But now we have a conversation with Armando Lucero. Again, this is a very personal kind of a thing that we get into, and a very serious thing we kind of jump into fairly early on some things and some matters. I think you will enjoy this. I had a great time talking with Armando, and I want to thank him again for being my guest and for opening up and sharing some of the ideas that he did. And so I believe that I will become a better magician by listening to and incorporating some of the ideas that he had suggested, and I hope that you feel the same way then too. So let me introduce our guest today, Mr. Armando Lucero, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and we're continuing my week at the Magic Castle here in 2017, and each year that I come back, of course, in the close-up room, as in the parlor, that they always have two performers, two magicians. There'll be someone working early, someone working late, and so, which means that if I'm working early, I can't see the person who's in the parlor working early, and vice versa, or whoever's working late, you can't see the person working late. But the advantage is, though, when you are working, you can always catch the person who's going to be performing with you, and in this particular case, I'm working the early shows, four shows, and then working the later evening shows is my friend and yours, Armando Lucero. Hello, Armando. Pronounce your name. I love the way you say it.
My name is Armando Lucero.
Armando Lucero.
Yes.
It sounds like, you know, the guy from Princess Bride. My name is...
yes.
What's the line? You killed my father.
You killed my father. Antonio, blah, 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 blah,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
That's
yes.
Right. So you're in the close-up room, and it's been a couple of years since you've last been to the castle, isn't that right?
No, actually, it was more recent than that.
Okay.
Around Christmas time.
Oh, just this past year?
Yeah.
Okay. I talked with you briefly at the, I guess it was a FISM, or was it Magic Live?
FISM,
I think it was
Italy.
FISM in Italy. Yeah.
Yes.
And you were one of the performers there?
Yes, or? I was, just for the shows.
Right.
The close-up shows.
One of the close-up shows. But not one of the competitors.
No.
Have you ever competed in that or cared to ever compete?
I've never competed at FISM.
But you competed at other conventions years ago?
No.
Or a long time? Never have?
No, I never really did.
What do you think about competitions? You think
it's
good?
It's not for me.
No, I understand, but for others? No. Yeah, but because you... I think to be a competitor, you have to have an end game. It's kind of like being on America's Got Talent. I mean, why compete for something unless that you want to get something out of it,
well,
you know, ultimately?
From what I hear from other people,
yeah,
who have competed, I have nothing against competition,
hmm,
but it's not for me. But what they tell me is that they just, they want, one of the reasons is they want to get more well known. It helps with being able to get bookings.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons. I remember talking to Lance about this, and he mentioned that it helped him in a personal way. And it wasn't about winning. It was just about setting a goal so that he can improve his magic. And I thought that was a good one.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because a lot of times there are no places to practice.
Mm-hmm.
That was something good, like about the Magic Castle, and also in Houston about the Magic Island, I guess the one out here when it lasted also. It's a good place to have a where you can perform 2, 3, 4, 5 times a night or whatever, time after time. And that's with that repetition, you can really get better.
Yes. There is a problem, though. When you're performing for, if your goal is to perform for magicians or for the judges at magic conventions,
yeah,
your material sometimes becomes skewed towards being good for the judges and the magicians, and not necessarily for the public.
Mm-hmm. That can be two different types of acts. So it could be a competition act versus one that's actually a commercial act.
Yeah, what do you call a commercial act?
I say a commercial act, that which people are willing to pay for that.
Oh, yes. Act. Well, you know, there are people who are very commercial that I've seen in competitions who,
mm-hmm,
have not won a thing, but they're making more money and they're booked all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Then these people are walking away as FISM winners who are having trouble booking themselves. And
mm-hmm,
it's a curious thing there.
I had that happen once to me, and I was competing at the at a convention. I didn't win, but one of the people who was in the audience was just a magician hobbyist, and he had a company, and said, I don't care whether you win or not. They hadn't awarded the contest,
mm-hmm,
competitors yet, the award. And so, but they said, I want to book you for a show we've got coming up. So I ended up, I felt like I am a winner.
Yes.
I ended up not getting the trophy, but I got the job.
Yeah. It's, It's difficult. For me personally, I'm not that interested in the competition. So for me, the real competition is winning a real audience over. That's
interesting. So it's not getting the job. Sometimes people might think that part of the work, well, it is, I think, of getting the job, because there are other people who are competing for it also and trying to get that same job. And that's why the magicians have to have that type of an ego whenever someone calls to say, well, you don't need to call anybody else. I'm the one. You know, we briefly talked about this just in the dressing, you and I, just about how that it seems that magicians have a devalue themselves a little bit.
Oh, I think we do it and we're not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. We do it quite often in the words, the language that we use to describe who we are. And it's difficult. I mean, for example, I remember my wife. I can tell you about this because I'm fine with it. But I didn't know that my esteem was low. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I thought my esteem was high.
Yeah, you had self-confidence.
But she pointed out some things and I realized that I still had a long ways to go.
Yeah.
And I was unaware until she pointed it out. Really, truly unaware. I think your audience would be happy to hear this. I was in one room and my wife was in the other room, and then she came up and she asked me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just working on my stuff. You know, usual stuff."
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said it without much pomp and circumstance, not much pride. In fact, it was one of those things where you're working on something so long, you're almost embarrassed to say how long you've been working on it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, obviously I was thinking that maybe I was working on it too long.
Okay.
Yeah. So she came into the room and stared at me. And I said, "What?" She goes, "You know what? I don't ever want to hear you talk like that again. This is your passion. This is your art. You work hard. You work hard just like Van Gogh, Beethoven, Einstein. Mm-hmm. But if you don't walk it and you don't talk it, no one's going to know it. So stop it."
Wow.
And I was like, whoa.
That was a wake-up call. Yeah.
Well, I had never thought about it in the way she put it.
Uh-huh.
I thought, you know, we categorize what we do. And we have sort of like magic is its own thing, and it's not as good as that, or it's not as important. People think of things like that, you know? But when she put it that way, there was no difference between all the other fields. Absolutely none.
Mm-hmm.
It was just as valuable, just as important. And that woke me up. And from then on, I've never thought of it as anything less.
So you're saying as long as that you have this consciousness of the importance of a magician's performing art being just as important as any other art, that we should be on the same level and not consider ourselves...
Not should, we are.
Exactly, we are.
Yeah, see, that's one of those things in the language.
Good point.
That's what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And I was always being defensive.
Uh-huh.
There's no need to be defensive. There's no need to excuse what we do.
Right.
In fact, someone who is there at the place where they should be would never even think that there's a reason to say anything to defend it or excuse it. They just are.
How would we go about trying to change the public consciousness of that? And I say this because a friend of mine, Harry Maurer and Carol Ann, work a lot of cruise ships, and that she was talking with someone once in Houston with the Houston Chronicle entertainment page and saying, "Hey, you know, here's something we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing this show at this place." And they pretty much told her that we don't consider magic as an art, and we will never give ink to anything that magicians do. I mean, how do you change a perception like that? And in that particular case, they obviously had some power in the media to choose what they're going to publish or not.
It's a very, very difficult thing to do. If you start the conversation by giving them a word that already that they're already prejudiced towards,
mm-hmm.
the word magic to a lot of people is something that they think of. They already have a thought about that. They have an idea. And so when you use that word, you're already working very hard to win them over. It sounds strange to say that. I'm very proud to be a magician. But if I know also that it doesn't mean the same thing to me as it does to others. Mm-hmm. And so part of the big problem is language. And language can affect the way people think about what you do or who you are. And so if we can find ways to deliver what we want, maybe use different words, maybe different definitions, which is quite hard.
It is. Just as I've said earlier, you know, we shouldn't use the news. You need to be more positive and have an affirmation rather than something that could be, I guess.
Yes. It's not easy. There's a lot of things you can do, but it's not easy. I'll give you an example. So I remember in China's Got Talent, there was a girl that came out and she, you know, just like they do with everybody in those talent shows, they interview them to try to win everybody over, give a little history about them. Right. She's a ballet dancer. So they...
Ballet dancer.
And she had been doing it for many, many years. They show her working out and all about her dreams and dancing. And then she came out and performed, and she was an excellent ballet dancer for about 30 seconds. And then magic. She did magic. She was a magician.
Okay.
As a ballet dancer.
She continued to dance as she was performing.
Yeah, so her foot went up and a bouquet of flowers disappeared.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then she started producing, and she had a little tutu, and she started producing cards.
I think I've seen this act.
Yeah, but, you know, I know it was very clever and people loved it, but I saw something else that was really valuable. What did she do? She told them she was a ballet dancer. Okay, she didn't tell him she was a magician.
She implanted a memory.
So they had, so they were not prepared with a surprise.
Right.
Therefore, she was able to get them to see her before they projected what they expected. This is important. When you give somebody a word of what they think you are, then they stop seeing you and they start projecting what they believe they should see.
That's an excellent point.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she was able to skip that. And see, that was a tool. So they could not, they were not prepared to superimpose what they believe they should see. Mm-hmm. And that was a tool. Now, I'm not sure if she's aware that that's exactly what happened, but that's what I saw.
Right.
Is this was a nice tool, a nice gimmick to break through the bias. And when you can use surprise like that, that helps a lot because all of a sudden they're actually seeing you.
They're in a completely different light.
Yeah. They are not using their previous...
prejudices.
Or preconceptions, yes.
Right, preconceptions, right.
Yeah.
In that particular case, like China's Got Talent, of course, that's going to be week after week. And at that point, whenever that you come back for the next time, you would the surprise is already gone. Now they're expecting, you know, the magician, what are you going to be doing for us kind of a thing.
Yes, but
you know,
she already won them over.
But she, yes, she has. She,
yeah,
with
so it's
that,
a positive thing.
That is a positive thing. That is a very good point. You know, in my lecture, one of the things that sometimes I will begin with is talking to people. When I introduce myself, I'll say, hello, what's your name? Steve, what do you do? I'm a photographer. Hello, you know, what is your name? I'm Michael. What do you do? I'm a school teacher. You know, okay, fine. And that's the way that people typically, when you're in a cocktail situation, you know, just kind of chatting and networking with people, that they, as soon as you hear that, people will categorize you with being blue collar, white collar, you know, this kind of level of income or whatever.
And they immediately think whether you're important or not to them.
Exactly. And should I spend any more time in a conversation with you? Mm-hmm. And what I say is, I would never come out and say to begin with, I'm a magician, which is another thing. Of course, a lot of us may not have magician name on the card, may be corporate entertainer or infotainer. I mean, different things I've heard people call themselves that get away from magician. But in a conversation, you know, I would say, well, I work with companies in order to increase their profit, which then they're going to say, how do you do that? What do you mean you increase their profit? Because, you know, they're working for a company. They're doing something. Well, I work with employees, and also I help the company to get more business and to attract customers. So this way that they can increase their profits and they can continue to grow. And the bottom line, their shareholders are happy. And they're going, well, that sounds fascinating. You know, so in other words, you keep building this up and giving value to what I'm doing, basically.
Yes.
And also they are invested more in the question, line of question, trying to get exactly what it is that I do. You know, how do I bring profit? How can I help this person to improve? Because then they're keenly aware of what's happening. So it's not until about the third or fourth or time that they ask some deeper question, then I'll say, well, you know, I'm working with them to help at their corporate industry shows, you know, or something like that. And then they'll say, well, what do you mean? Do you help make the booth or something? And then I say, well, actually, that I attract traffic to make sure that they understand that the company is all about and their quality and service and the new products they have and whatever, and introduce them. You know, I'd stop the traffic. Well, how do you stop traffic? Well, I do some magic, but in the process of doing magic, that I'm not just entertaining them, but I'm stopping them with the magic and using that as a tool to tell them about the company. And then after I've just kind of said, so you're a magician. Yes, I am. But suddenly it's completely different light.
But you were able to give them the information to understand before they...
Right. So it's much like what you were talking about, where I had the video about this young lady doing the dancing and everything that she had prepared for, you know, as a performer, to give this one impression that she does that and establishes her credibility, I guess, and a new perception.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But it's tricky. It doesn't always work.
Hmm.
If you don't do it artfully right, they feel cheated, you know, like they got the rug from under them because they won't let go of what they're doing.
Well, that's a very good point. They still put you in a position as a clown, you know. Well,
you're a magician.
Hey, magician.
Oh yeah. Why didn't you tell me in the beginning, man? That you lied, right?
That's what magicians do. We do. We lie. We con people, you know. And here's your watch, kind of a thing. Yeah. But that's another thing is that a lot of times that magic and magicians are categorized or put into a box along with a children's entertainer. It's like, well, we had a clown at our 55-year-old birthday party last week, and you know. Are you available next week or whatever?
Yes.
And that's another thing, too, we briefly discussed last night was how that magicians, truth be known, in some cases who are hobbyists or amateurs or just wanting to find an audience to practice, would probably do it for free or $50 or whatever just for the opportunity to do it. They're not looking at it necessarily of trying to have this as an opportunity for growth and practice to work on something that you can do later, but rather, hey, I just love to perform. I want to get out. You know, it's like another round of golf. It's an opportunity to play another golf course. You know,
I think that's most magicians. Yeah. There's a few select who are very passionate and interested in more than that.
But, sure.
For the most part, when you go to conventions, that's what I see most of the conventions, magic conventions filled with, is people who are just happy to be hobbyists.
Of course. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And I believe most conventions are filled with avid hobbyists and enthusiasts, and the professionals are typically the ones who are the talent that are performing there.
Yeah.
A lot of them, if they're full-time professionals, or out working someplace else, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes, I mean, I was working with Eric Citron trying to put together Magic Business University, the idea being that we'll bring in these different speakers, so we'll be talking to a convention, if you will, but not really teaching tricks, but teaching the marketing side of it. Couldn't get enough people, you know, because, well, hey, it's not a convention. Who's going to be performing? Nobody's performing. It's going to be talking about marketing and promotion. And
it was a good lesson there. For me, it's not so much a business. It's just been my love and passion. Mm-hmm. I just happen to be able to, you know, make a business out of it. But that's not really why I'm in it. I mean, if I never got paid for it, I'd still be doing it.
Right. Now, you also give lessons. Is that right?
I do.
Okay. Now, are you kind of like Slidini from the standpoint that you kind of take on anybody and you'll give a lesson or two?
No.
Or you just have...
No.
How are you selective? If someone comes to you and says...
Well, you know, I'm not that harsh, you know, as people might think. I'm not that way. You know, I'm willing to take on anyone who has a passion and interest and respect for...
How do you determine that?
Well, I start out... I go by the way of what I was influenced by from Joseph Campbell. And he talked about the rite of passage. And I mean, I can go into that if you like.
Sure.
Yeah.
We got
well,
time.
he brought up some interesting things. You could watch his videos and his and read his books, but basically he talked about the difference of you know, people without much of a rite of passage experience versus mm-hmm. those with one. I remember being captured by his words when I first was changing the channel. I didn't even know who he was. And I saw Bill Moyers interviewing Joseph Campbell. And these words came out, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly, but he said, "You can always trace the downfall of a society by its lack of mythology." And I was captured. And I go, wow, this is really interesting. And I watched the entire program.
Yeah.
And the rest of him being interviewed by Bill Moyers. And so he went on to describe what that meant. And he said, you know, culture is made up of what is that mythology and what is our culture? It is the mores, the belief systems, the traditions, and all those things that bring us together as a group. It is the glue of our culture. Mm-hmm. And when you lack that, then the culture falls apart. And that may or may not be a bad thing. He was just observing, you know?
Yes.
He says sometimes it does have to fall apart to rebuild again. But what I liked about it, what hit me really hard, was when he, and I'm paraphrasing again, when he described the differences between one culture and another, one culture being America, another being Africa. Mm-hmm. And so if you ask somebody, you know, when did you become a man? And this man says, this is in America.
Yeah.
I think when I smoked a cigarette. Nope. When I took my first drink. Nope. When I went to the military. No. When I graduated from college. No, that's not it. When I got married. And they don't really have a definite answer.
Of a point in time yeah. where they can identify.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he described this tribe in Africa where all the kids are told that one day they're going to become a man, the male kids, mm-hmm. and they must prepare. And being a small group, everybody is aware and everybody knows each other and they all know their goals and all the kids talk about it and they prepare, they're told and taught how to prepare. Every day when there's a lesson, you know, you're not prepared, you better be prepared. And then the ritual, the last ritual, where they're sent out into the wilderness to fend for themselves. These kids, they're like 11, 12 years old.
Sure.
And they have to live on their own for, let's say, a few days or a week. They have to kill and hunt, you know, hunt and kill mm-hmm. and eat and survive. And they could die. So they're sent out and the whole tribe, the community is out there trying to, you know, make them, comfort them as
support
they leave.
Them.
Yeah,
sure.
Support
mm-hmm.
them. So they sense that. So this really affects them mm-hmm. Visually, auditorily. It's the entire senses that are affected.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a strong, strong rite of passage memory they will carry for the rest of their lives. They go out and they do this thing. Some of them come back, you know, with lots of meat because they
yeah.
hunted well.
Yeah.
Some are practically starving.
Yeah.
The real lesson is that they survived. You know, they all come back differently. They all have their own stories, but they survived.
Good point.
And then they come back and they prepare the ceremony. And they can feel the importance of what they've achieved because the whole community is involved. One day you're going to become a man. Well, this is going to happen. And then they line up for their festivity, the ceremony. You know, their trousers are brought down and they got one master of the ceremonies. And he comes out with a knife and circumcises all the boys in front of everybody, you mm-hmm. know? So they are standing there naked mm-hmm. In front of everybody having this done. And it seems to me symbolic, you know, of what is happening internally in them, you know, they are standing naked because they're mm-hmm. proud of who they are mm-hmm. and what they've become and what they are becoming.
Internally and physically.
Yes, internally and physically. So this is a physical...
And emotional.
And emotional affirmation mm-hmm. of what is happening inside them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are told when the cut happens,
mm-hmm.
you are now a man. This is the moment. So now, you ask a child... That had that experience. When did they become a man? And they will tell you the date, the hour, the second,
mm-hmm.
and what it means to them. So what does this have to do with anything? Well, the point that I remember Joseph Campbell was talking about is that this was a visceral experience, you know? And
mm-hmm, sure.
And these people have a belief system and a strength about them because their core was... made so strong from these experiences that they know who they are. They're mm-hmm. not lost. Whether you believe in what they do or not is not what the point is for me. That the fact that they had something that made them strong is the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know who they are. And you can't break them so easily. And these people, they're the kinds of people that, you know, if you tell them to do something and they have to go far to do it, well, they're more likely to do it than others who have never done it, you know? They're the ones that are more committed. They're the ones that have the experience of suffering and knowing what it means, you know,
mm-hmm.
to pay for something that they want and desire. And if you are a magician who's performing for your audiences and you're pretending to be strong when you're not, usually very often I think you'll get caught out. Somebody asked me one day, what is the difference? Why is it that these older magicians, these seasoned magicians seem to have something different about than all the young magicians? What is it? And I said, well, they have developed a very strong core of who they are as a human being. And it emanates from them, from mm-hmm. the inside out. And they're not pretending. That's who they are.
They have it.
Oh, yeah. Whatever it is, you know, it comes from experience. Somebody who's gone through a lot.
Sure.
Usually you can feel it coming from them. Sometimes you meet somebody who has a strength about them, and then you find out what they've gone through. And you go, wow, now I know why they're so strong. Or why they are so powerful.
That's like with artists, and I'm including musicians then as well, who are writing songs from their heart, that they have had some experiences, or painters who have gone through emotional experiences or whatever that you can see on the canvas or in the sculpture or in their words.
Yes.
And their songs or music that they have experienced something that I haven't, or maybe that I have and I can relate to that because I've had a similar kind of heartbreak or love or whatever that experience is they're trying to show. But it's through that. I mean, it's like the blues, you know, the blues would be a perfect example kind of a thing.
Yes.
You know, there are some people who will sing the blues and say, that guy's not genuine. You know, he's just singing someone else's song, you know, as opposed to someone who's experienced the hardships. You know, you can feel it.
Reminds me of a line that I heard Rod the Hop say, kids trying to play the blues, but ain't even got a stinky finger yet.
That is funny.
And usually when I say that, half the people are going, huh? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to tell them.
Yeah. You get it or you don't. Which reminds me of that old joke I'd heard. I think Max Maven said that once about, what was that? This guy had done a show, and afterwards this lady came back, said, oh, this is a wonderful show. I absolutely loved it, you know, that I want to have your baby, and you're the most wonderful thing. And he said, which show did you see?
That's funny.
And you can relate to that. If you can relate to that, it's a very funny show. So you're selective then in trying to determine who.
Well, I will say no. I will say no to people.
Initially, you say
I
no.
I have. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, but, mm-hmm. you know, every now and then. So basically, I have my website, and that's the first part.
Mm-hmm.
And then they either sign up or not. I tell them what it's about, and they read it. And so that's the start, you know. And I have a whole philosophy of why I do the workshop, you know, my attitude section.
When we say workshop, are there several people or just one at a time?
Oh, I do group workshops.
Okay.
I also do one-on-one.
Okay. But the group workshops are what, six people or so? What's the
five
max
people.
You would normally? Five, okay.
About five people.
In Vegas?
Most. Yeah, mm-hmm. In Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. Usually at my house. Mm-hmm. And then we just do 2 hours, take a break, go to lunch, and then another 2 hours. And that mm-hmm. usually works out pretty well. I want to do the one-on-one. I rarely do them in person, but I'm starting to.
Like Skype usually, you mean?
Usually I do them over the internet, and I use Appear.in. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
Yeah, that's a nice one. And so we just talk on the internet, mm-hmm. and it seems to work out very, very well. In fact, uh-huh. Everyone has told me they learn more this way than live, but they still prefer live.
Well, but if you have it that
magic
way, they could record it also and then play that back then later, can't they?
They could. Mm-hmm. I don't do it, and most of them don't do it, because what I usually do is I send them...
Flash drive or something? Or
well, no,
a file.
I just send them files mm-hmm. of nicer examples of the pieces that we shared and talked about. So mm-hmm. To record our live talk is nice, but it doesn't contain the pieces the way I like them mm-hmm. to present them to them, you know. So I send them a really nice piece that they can look at and
yeah.
remember all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing, some years ago we had talked, I think, about this, because it's not just close-up. You've done illusions. I mean, big stage shows.
Yeah, I used to do illusions. I did illusion shows in Taiwan. I was actually entertainment director for Tainan at Wuzlan, a park there.
It was an amusement Wuzlan, park. Theme
yeah.
park?
Okay. Yeah,
kind of
park.
A thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I did that for about 3 years. A lot of people don't know that, yeah.
And
I was also in some large Vegas shows like... Dick Foster Productions.
Spellbound?
No, I did work on the side of Spellbound, but mostly it was Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, it was called, what did they call it? Now I forgot. It was our own show. Anyway, Joaquin Ayala was in it, and I played the court jester. And so my job was to entertain them like the guy in Cirque du Soleil's when they walk around and entertain
okay.
people. So I was that guy in this show, and I opened the show for 15 minutes, so I was the only thing they saw for mm-hmm. 15 minutes.
Did you do physical comedy? Or
yes, I did.
Huh, okay.
Yeah. I think people today would probably, magicians would probably be surprised that I actually did that stuff, because mm-hmm. they only know me as, I think, the coin guy.
Coin guy, yeah, and card guy. But do you feel that that gave you some experience that you've been able to take?
I don't think I could have done what I do now without
that having that?
Oh, yeah.
So what you're telling people is they should try to get as much experience in other kinds of things and not be so narrowly focused.
And not just magic, in everything.
In life, in general.
In life, yeah.
Listen to what's going on around
you. It's funny you should say that, because I was in Japan and somebody sent me an article. But by the way, I was in Japan talking to a group of students and employees from... a magic bar there. They're friends of mine.
Okay.
They're like my Japanese family.
Okay. Do you speak Japanese?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I was talking to them and I was saying that they should experience as much as they can about anything. And they should get married. They should have girlfriends or boyfriends. They should break up. They should experience everything. They should do whatever it takes to live, you know?
Right.
And then I get this message and an email from somebody said, "Hey, did you read this article? You're in it." And I go, "What?" And it was an article written about the Magic Castle.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in it. And they interviewed everybody but me. And they're talking about this guy who just went away for years and just disappeared in a room and practiced coins over and over and over. And I'm going, "Wow. Who is that guy?" It's me. They're describing me. Well, it made for a good story, I think, a very interesting, bizarre story, uh-huh. but attracted a lot of attention, I think. And so I'm sure they didn't want to interview me, because if they did, they would have gotten a different story. You know?
And, but it sounded good.
But here's the irony. I'm in Japan telling them not to do that.
Yeah.
While I get this article and they're describing me that way.
Say one thing and do something else.
Yeah. So it's funny. So yeah, don't lock yourself in a room and just practice magic. That's not healthy. It's not good.
Well, if that's exclusively what you do, I think it's important to do that, but then to also get out and kind of experience.
No, I don't think ever. I don't think you should ever do. I think you should practice, yes, but I don't think you should ever just isolate yourself. Right. First, if you practice and develop technical skill, you don't have the balance of being able to communicate something from the inside because you have nothing developed on the inside.
Yeah.
Now, there are those who also have a lot to say, but they have not developed the technical skill to deliver it. Mm-hmm. So it needs a balance.
Right.
You need both.
Right. Well, I was thinking, for an example, like the show that you're doing this week, and I mean, the dressing room, you have on your headphones and you're focused on practicing and rehearsing.
Oh, that.
And
yes.
Doing
Yeah. I do do that.
Yeah. It seems like you are so laser
focused.
I do
isolate that way. Yes. Yeah. But, you know, you have to think a mouse and then think like an eagle. Mm-hmm. You got to go back and forth. That's
right.
Yeah.
What is your preparation before a show? I mean, I've seen you on this, but this is a completely different kind of a venue at the castle. But when you're getting ready to perform someplace professionally, do you have some sort of a procedure that you go through to kind of get you in the right state of mind? Or you just walk in and
never,
say, hey, how
it
you
was
doing?
Never planned. I just kind of found, you know, my own way. I think everybody should. But for me, I just need to find some time where I can be by myself and I hate to say meditate because I don't know what it means to other people, but for me, mm-hmm. it just means just being able to rest from everything else. And
you find a quiet corner, basically.
Yeah, I like to be in a quiet place before I perform.
And when you do, do you do a lot of strolling, walk around, or do you do like a set piece where people come to a table where you are?
I used to do strolling only out of necessity, and then after a while I realized that's not ever what I want to do. So I stopped doing it. And, I should tell you why. I was working at Knott's Berry Farm and many other places mm-hmm. as well, and I was getting really tired of what I was doing, and I didn't like it. And I didn't understand it at the time. I was asking my friends, are you happy with what you're doing? And they said, yeah, they were fine. So I didn't understand why they were fine, and I wasn't. So I quit. I quit magic, and I said I was never going to do it again, ever.
Any kind of magic?
Any kind.
Wow.
Yeah. And I went back to school, and I was studying math and philosophy.
Okay.
So I was going to be a math teacher. Anyway, about 3 or 4 years later, my family was needing some help, so I decided to help out by doing what I knew how to do, mm-hmm. magic. So I went back into it. And then I learned something. Now I had the answer. I know what happened. I just love magic so much that it hurt me when I was not getting the appreciation that I felt was necessary for me to continue doing it. And part of that problem was I was putting myself in environments where there was no way I was going to get that appreciation.
So you were accepting jobs that you shouldn't have,
yes.
Basically.
So it would be like thinking of a classical musician who went to Juilliard and spent his money and his life working towards a goal, only to end up in some bar with Joe beer cans mm-hmm. asking for songs that he hated playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized what I was doing. So I got to stop doing that. And from then on, I said, I will never, ever take a job that I don't like. And I was turning down lots of shows, lots mm-hmm. of television shows and stuff, you know. So, but I knew that I needed to do that to keep healthy because I'm too sensitive. I love what I do too much.
Yeah.
It's my mistress, you know, and I'm in love with her.
Yeah.
I can't do that to her.
Is that kind of your manly moment or the time whenever that you could point to and say, that's when I feel like I became a man?
I guess that's, well, we have many, I think, but that's one of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I finally discovered that's what it was, I realized, well, I'm very serious about this, you know, I'm very passionate. And I realized that some of my friends are not, and that's why they were okay. you know, to them, it was all right.
It wasn't a job to them. It was something they were just having fun doing as opposed to having it.
Or they just learned to accept it. Yes. And I didn't. I was ready to
quit.
That
sounds like a prostitute. You know, I'm just saying, well, it was a job
yeah,
in which that they just do it, and eventually you get to accept it, just not that you're enjoying it and whatever, but you're being paid for it. And it's like, eh, what the heck, it's a job. And
yeah. Well, I found it interesting that I would meet magicians when they're young, because now I'm 60, you know, and when they were young, and I watched them progress.
Yeah.
And when they were young, they had all this desire, this hunger, this passion, you know, and they were excited and they didn't care about money. They just wanted to, you know, do magic because they loved it, you know?
Sure.
And then years would go by and I decided to have this business where I now do speaking engagements. And I'm going, why are you doing that? Well, there's more money in it.
Well, then you never really loved magic.
Well, maybe they did, but, you know, they got sidetracked. Because I saw that they did. They loved magic. They did at that moment.
Yeah.
So what happened, you know? And I think they forget that, you know, magic's not the only way to make money. They could have gotten into something else.
Well, there are a lot of people who do magic on a part-time basis. Let's look like, for example, Gene Anderson, perfect example of someone who used to lecture on part-time professional, and I love that title. But he was employed then by Dow Chemical, but he was going around still doing magic, you know, part-time. But rather than saying that you are an amateur or a hobbyist or, you know, a part-time whatever, he considered a part-time pro, because that means that you're not always performing. When you are performing, you are in a professional environment. You're acting as a professional. You are conducting yourself at a certain level. You're accepting a certain fee, but you're not doing it on a full-time basis, so it's only a part-time. So you're a part-time professional, you know, as opposed to a full-time amateur.
Yeah. What the hell does that all mean? I just want to do magic.
I just want to do magic, yeah. But there, as Eugene Berger would say, there are many rooms in the house of whether that they're going to be performers or creators or collectors or builders or whatever that they happen to be, of having a passion that will find a way some way or another to feeding that dragon that's consuming their soul, you know, of something that's a passion that they love, that may or may not necessarily draw a lot of money. I mean, like this podcast, I love doing the podcast. It's certainly not something that I can earn a living doing, but I like talking with people and learning stories and hearing, and I'm learning a lot, you know, from all of this and having just a heck of a time, you know. It's part of the passion, you know, it feeds me. So you just got to find out, I guess, you know, what it is.
Yeah, well, I now know why I do what I do.
So. Why is that?
I love it. That's
the bottom line. Exactly.
Yeah, I love it. I love to see the expressions on people's faces when I mess with their minds. Okay. And I love doing it. I also love understanding how and why it works if I can.
Right.
Yeah, I love that part. I think I love that part more than many of my friends who are in magic.
And you have it well scripted too. I mean, in watching your show the other night, there are a few close-up magicians who have brought me to tears or near tears. And and I say that with such reverence and thanks for not only your friendship, but just for the experience that you shared with the group because of how much time I could see that you, well, maybe it's because I could see things that the other audience doesn't, you know, when behind the scenes, to see the passion and the focus and the drive that you have, and I know that's in your soul. But the scripting that I know that you have to go through to have the right words and the right pauses and the right gestures and everything that goes with it, that typically is the choreography that goes with someone who is on stage, of blocking. However, that you have that in a smaller set, and then to incorporate music as well, and the right type of music with the right timing and pausing and with the gestures with the fingers and things that are happening. I mean, that the dancers are your 10 digits, I mean, on the table. And the music that goes with it perfectly, it's a ballet.
Glad you noticed.
Yeah. that's why I said it. Just looking at that, it's like, this guy is going to be the magician of the year. This is phenomenal. You just and I've been saying that behind your back and everybody, so it's not just because you're here right now. All week long, I said, you got to go see this guy. So
thank you for noticing. Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. I like to combine as many things as possible to affect, you know, people emotionally and physically. So I like to, I think of all of it as theater. Mm-hmm. I've never thought of it as anything less. Always I right. aim for theater. And for me, the close-up, people have said, well, it's not theater, but to me it's theater, yes. always theater. It doesn't matter whether you are strolling. It doesn't matter whether you're on the street. It doesn't matter even if you're on stage, if you're not on stage. It's still theater to me. Mm-hmm. My idea of theater is being able to make the best of what you can, you know, best of everything around you.
Uh-huh. Your environment.
And turn it into a theater. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are limited by the tools that we have, so we do the best we can with what we have.
Right.
I just think it's interesting that we're at the Magic Castle, and I've heard this said every now and then, you got to go see the main show after the close-up show. Yeah. I'm going,
this is not the
what
main.
What does that say about us?
Yeah, I got to hurry to see the main show. What am I, chopped liver? Yeah.
I think it's strange. That's the power of language.
True.
You know? Mm-hmm.
They don't mean it that way, but that's
they don't mean that. Yeah. They don't mean that. Mm-hmm. I remember performing them at the close-up room here one day, and this guy, he was really into the magic I was performing, and he was very complimentary until I presented an effect, and I said, "This I would like now to present to you something that took me about 10 years to develop." Mm-hmm. And under his breath, he said, "Oh, sad."
Someone in the audience had said that?
Yeah. Huh. But he was the guy that was being very complimentary just beforehand. Uh-huh. I mean, his eyes were popping out, his jaw was dropped. And I looked at him, and I realized at that moment the person that he was a few moments ago didn't match the person who was saying these words. Mm-hmm. What was that? That was really damn interesting that he would say this after being blown away. And I think I know what it is.
Go ahead. I have an opinion too.
So I think he had this idea about magic and magicians, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that they are not serious.
Right.
And
they're just little tricks.
Yeah, the little tricks. And so when I said 10 years, he just automatically responded as he was trained to. Mm-hmm. But it didn't match anything he felt because I could see it in his face. You know, he was like amazed. Even after the show, he was saying, "I've never seen anything like this." Blah, blah, blah. He was very complimentary and genuine.
That's an automatic response when he said
that. And it didn't fit the words that he uttered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now I think about this. If a classical musician, you know, said, "I'd like to present a piece that just took me 10 years to develop just so I can perform for you," I don't think anybody would utter anything to
say, "Joy is sad." Yeah. I don't think they'd be saying that.
And then now think about the things that we do to teach our audiences, mm-hmm, the importance or lack thereof of what we do. I've heard magicians say jokes like after they riffle the cards, "Yes, I have no life."
Right.
And people laugh. They get a response. Uh-huh. It's very nice, entertaining to do this. However, now imagine a classical musician playing Rachmaninoff, and in the middle of Rachmaninoff, he turns and says, "Ha ha, I have no life." That's weird.
Wow, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So what does that do?
That diminishes and demeans the art.
And we do it without even knowing it. We're unaware. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Wow. That's some heavy stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember being speechless over there before. Creativity. When it comes to the kinds of things you're doing, like with cards and coins, and you are having this piece, and one script, and some is the music, then you go back to script, and you have coins, and you go to cards and things. Do you have a piece at a time that you work on to begin with, and then you say, "I think this will go well with this," and or do you develop this and then have it flow into something else just organically, or do you have to pick and choose?
I always begin with play. I just play, and mm-hmm. I let my mind be free to do anything it wants to do. I just enjoy and play. I turn into a little child, and I just pick up things and try different ideas, and all of a sudden, something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can never plan it. It's very hard to plan it. But once something happens, then I grab it and go with it, and I start developing it into something. And that's usually what it is, but it's always play.
But like an artist on a canvas, if they see something or they make a wrong brush stroke, they'll just start, you know, throw it away, paint over it, something. Do you find that's the case sometimes too? Okay.
Yeah. You have to be fearless to let go of what you're comfortable with.
That's a good point. Sometimes you've brought this baby up to adolescence, and then you think, you know, this
is... Well, I remember starting out the script with this initial idea that started me on the script, only to discard the initial idea that started me on the script.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird, you know?
Yeah.
Here's this birth of a script, and I got rid of the actual birth.
Yeah. You get rid of the birth, and it's partway into life already,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I threw that other part away, and yeah. I was going, so the thing that got me into it is what's not in it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that's an important thing, to recognize those things that you... That should be whittled away, you know. I mean, I had, and are you your own director, or do you have someone else who?
No,
is...
I do everything.
No,
yeah. I love it.
Okay,
I love it too much.
I just think by having an objective third party who is able to watch.
Well, my audience
with a critical. Well, and they're telling you then.
Yes.
And you listen to your
it's
audience.
It's always
obviously.
My audience. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Always my audience. Yes,
and you can tell whether or not you're getting the reaction that you should, or something.
Well,
or
I know that you can't always tell. So you have to develop
audience
a sense.
Change.
You have to develop a sense to understand, you know, what they're saying to you.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just about performing, but getting the feedback and then understanding what that feedback means.
Well, now what you do is completely different. You know, I was talking to Martin Cox today about we were having lunch about certain audiences that laugh at this or that, and some are sitting on their hands, and it depends upon whether that they know each other or not, or they might feel a little bit reluctant or intimidated to react because they start to applaud or laugh and then realize that people, you know, they feel they're being judged by the people next to them that maybe they shouldn't be or whatever. But the point I'm kind of getting to is that, like with his case, and hopefully some in my case, that I want and expect laughter. What you're doing is a very serious thing. There's some surprises.
No, but you're right.
But how do you find, I can judge, I think, if the audience is laughing, they're applauding at certain points, and if they're not, then it's like, oh, I need to change that, take that out, or how can I, you know, whatever. Since you're not getting that kind of immediate feedback, I mean, is it just gasps and shock or applause, or how do you
well,
judge an audience?
It might sound strange to some people. I just can feel it.
No, okay.
I feel their energy, and okay. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
I know that they're in a moment of astonishment, and that mm-hmm. and I can feel it, and they give it to me in many different ways.
So you're not just watching the coins in your hands. I mean, you're looking at the audience as well to kind of feel what's happening with them.
But I think I can actually feel mm-hmm. them, and as strange as that may be.
Even a larger audience?
Oh, yeah.
Not just the intimate audience here with 26 people or something.
Yeah, no. I think one of the advantages of having performed for small audiences gives you a strength of understanding intimacy so that you can carry it forth in a larger theater mm-hmm. as well. Because mm-hmm. I performed for The Illusionists.
No, that's right. I forgot you were traveling with
1903.
Him.
1903. And they had audiences of 2,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. And that was obviously with an overhead projector of some sort, I guess.
Yes,
then.
Uh-huh. Yes. And, you know, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. You have to play it a little differently. You become like someone under a microscope on a stage like that. You
know, right.
With every little move is judged. And also the size to telegraph to a larger audience. I mean, in a small room, I would gesture to get somebody's attention.
Okay.
You know, in a theater that large, a gesture may often be missed.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, I would walk 5 steps forward.
Okay.
Which would equal my gesture
with
my hand
right.
in an intimate room. So yeah, everything's changed. But it gave me the opportunity, that having worked close-up shows, gave me the opportunity to transmit that same power of intimacy to a larger audience as well. It taught me that.
That's interesting. So the fourth wall exists whether it's with a close-up audience or with a stage.
Yeah, it can if mm-hmm. if you learn to be aware of it and mm-hmm. Find tools to break through.
Right,
yeah.
Right. What was that like traveling with them? Did you just travel around the U.S. or were you part of the international
international. I went to Australia. Mm-hmm. But I only did it for a little, very, very short
time. Was that with Charlie Fry and
Charlie
David
Fry.
Williamson?
Yes, Charlie Fry.
Yeah, Charlie is.
Charlie Fry was nice. I think he was happy to have a buddy that could, you know, passionately get involved in magic too. So
yeah,
after he would coax me to come over. I was on one side of the theater, you know, when I take my break between the shows because we had our acts, right?
Right.
And then between the acts, we'd go off to the side. And then he would set a nice little table and a mat. And it started getting improved each time and coaxed me to go over there so I can practice.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to practice with me, right? Oh. So that was cool. We were just magic geeks. You know?
So at the evening, you'd hang out, go to a restaurant and still talk magic, I guess, and stuff? Or?
Well, most I would do that on my own. I'd go to coffee shops. That was my ritual. Mm-hmm. I love to go to a coffee shop because it is something that I found comfortable and consistent. Mm-hmm. So no matter where I travel, that became my thing. I'd look for a coffee shop that I felt comfortable in. And then I felt at home again, and I would practice.
And when you do that, sure, I mean, in most coffee shops, there are people sitting around their laptops or look at their phones or whatever else. And if you have some cards or coins, you're starting to do something. I would think that's different enough that would attract attention, and somebody's going to say, what are you doing? And then you say, pick a card. I mean, is that a case that you...
That happens sometimes.
Not really.
Not,
I think it would happen all the time.
Huh. It doesn't happen that often.
Wow.
I find ways to show that I just want to be alone.
Okay.
So, in a polite way.
Yeah. Because a lot of times I see magicians are doing something and they're trying to attract attention.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to contemplate. Yeah.
So you have like on headphones or something perhaps or something that
yes, kind of, yes. Mm-hmm. I found that works really well.
And same thing on airplanes.
And
keep people talking to you.
I have my laptop up so it's blocking part. Yes.
Yeah.
I find tricks.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they do come.
Yeah,
and they asked me to show them a trick, and then, and I use that as an opportunity to educate them if I can.
Really?
About the value of what we do. Yeah.
Just to say, this is not something.
Is it
what you say or what you do? How do you?
Everything. I'll give you an example.
Okay, give me an example.
So I'm at a coffee shop, and this boisterous group comes over. It's just this man and his two children who are about 12 years old.
Okay.
Both of them 10 or 12, right? And they're just kind of just walking around with their arms moving around. They're just very, very open.
Animated
people. And he just looks over, and he's very friendly. He looks over, and he sees me with a deck of cards, and I have my computer open. He goes, hey, you're doing card tricks?
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, would you show my kids some tricks? Just like that, just boom.
Okay.
And
perform monkey dance.
Yes. So I look up from my computer. I'm very calm. I said, yeah, I would love to show you, but if you don't mind, I have some work I have to finish. And then afterwards, if you're still here, I'll do it for you. Yeah. So I was very polite.
Yeah.
That was
to show that you don't.
That was. Yes.
Yeah.
What
do
is
it on
that?
Demand.
Yeah, I'm not
that your time is
monkey,
valuable.
Yes,
you're telling him your time is valuable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I put my hand out. I say, "Hi, my name's Armando. What's your name?"
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at my eyes. Look, I am a human being.
Look at me.
Right?
Ah, interesting.
Who
okay.
am I?
Yeah.
Do you even care? Like
he's
just looking at the cards, right?
Sure.
So I don't think he was expecting that. And then he came down, sat down. He was very interested in what I was doing, and so I knew I didn't have to ask him. Otherwise, I would have offered, but he started, interrupting my work, and I knew that would happen. So.
Engaging in conversation.
Yeah, but I had already planned, So he started engaging me. He goes, so where do you work? What do you do? Blah blah blah. I said, well, I'm writing a book right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're writing a book of magic? Yes and no. So mm-hmm. I'm getting him to ask questions, right?
Right.
And so, who's in control here?
You are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. That's the point.
Yeah.
So he's asking the questions, and now I get to educate. It's an opportunity. So I start talking about the book that I'm writing, and that it's that I'm working with a neuroscientist, and I have a writer that's helping me, and this is about art and science together. Psychology of magic. And he said, "Well, what does that have to do with neuroscience?" And blah blah blah. And I talked about inattentional blindness. I talked about information interference. I showed them an example of, you know, what it is. I took out a box and I said, here, lift this, you know, and it was two boxes.
Okay.
Two decks. And then lift that one.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And
the top one's
isn't
heavier.
That interesting? Yeah. Your preconception, you know, your heuristics, mm-hmm. Did not allow you to expect that. So you expect something else.
And right.
I said, that's what I'm writing about. I'm writing about all this. Mm-hmm. We have a lot to offer, I think. He goes, wow. He started to change.
Suddenly, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And then after a while, on purpose.
Yeah.
About a half hour later.
They're still there.
They're still there.
Okay.
I said, would you like to see what I do? He says, oh, yes. So they're looking at my cards. They're looking at my hands. And I turn the computer, and I turn on the French TV show that I was on.
Okay.
And they see the audience. They see me on stage with the host. It looks very professional. Mm-hmm. And they see the lights. They know I'm on TV.
Right.
Another perception change.
Wow.
Right? And all of a sudden, he looks at me differently.
It's like, you're that guy.
He stops. He stops being boisterous.
Uh huh.
He starts becoming respectful, and he starts saying, "Sir."
Wow.
He says, "Sir, that was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much." And I go, "Well, I promised I'd show your children something, so I'm going to show them something." And I did something special just for them.
Yeah.
But now, when I did it, it was a huge thing.
That they will take away that memory forever.
And
it wasn't just some guy in the coffee shop doing card tricks.
This was an opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time, but, you know, it is possible to, you know, get them to see.
Change their perception.
Yes, but it's not easy.
Doing it one person at a time.
Yeah, it's not easy, yeah. And I'm sure he walked away with a different, you know, thought about
attitude towards magic and magicians
yes.
in general. And
yeah.
Thinking maybe that there is a lot more than what these guys do.
Yeah.
Rather than just...
He realized it wasn't just a trick. He had no idea that there was actual science and art behind it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He just thought it was just somebody who goes and buys a trick and learns it in an hour or...
Yeah, you just go to the magic shop and you go pick up something and do it tonight. And,
and he completely changed. Yeah.
Wow, fabulous. Well, listen, as we start to wrap up, and I do appreciate your time so much. You're sitting here with me, Armando.
Yes.
Is the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So I always like to ask my guests, what is your philosophy of life? You've talked about a lot of different things that are important to you, but what is, it could be a phrase, it doesn't have to be a word.
Well, I kind of take a cue from Joseph Campbell, which is follow your bliss.
Follow your bliss.
Yes. But I would also take a cue from, what's his name? I'm so sorry. He travels the world and does jobs that nobody else will.
George Plimpton? No.
he has a show about...
Oh, is Dirty Jobs?
Dirty Jobs,
yes. Okay, I can't think of his name, but he was on.
And he, on the contrasting side of Joseph Campbell, he found that the people who did these jobs, these horrible jobs nobody else wants,
right,
were some of the happiest people in the world. Hmm. And there's something to be said about being limited and then finding peace with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, follow your bliss, but also on the contrasting side, find peace with what you have.
Wow. There are so many gems in this. I'm going to go back and listen to this several times myself. Wonderful spending time with you. Thanks a lot for being on the Magic Word podcast.
My pleasure. I was a little bit wary. I don't usually do this, but thanks.
I know. I've drawn you out over here.
Yes.
So that's great.
It was a good conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so for the Magic Word podcast, that was Armando Lucero, and this is Scotty out. Well, I think we just need to take a breath here and try to digest what all we just heard. Wow. Thank you, Armando, very much for being my guest and for opening up and sharing these ideas and thoughts on magic and how that you look at magic. Certainly, it is a little bit different from a perspective that the common hobbyist would have. This really does show what it takes to be a true professional and to achieve excellence. And certainly, I think that you are an excellent magician and have reached that pinnacle among the
the higher level of magicians who are out there. Very good. Wow. Good stuff. So again, thank you, Armando, for being my guest, and thank you, listeners, for listening to this. And if you're like me, you'll want to go back and listen to this again and kind of keep this on your smart instruments, so this way you can go back and listen to it time and time again. So, yeah, pretty cool. Well, friends and listeners, it's time for another product review. Some products that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can purchase from your favorite magic dealer. First up is from magicworld.co.uk, and this is called Epic Rider. The couple of guys there at the Magic World shop, Aaron Calvert and James Anthony, are the ones who are mentalists, and they explained this little prop to you. Let me explain, first of all, that as far as the prop itself goes, this is a boon rider. For those of you who know what a boon rider is, or a nail rider, it is, that's what it is. Basically, it's something that can attach to your thumb. Now, there are different ways. I don't know how else really to explain this without revealing a little bit of the secret, but it is for writing secret information. The idea of this particular boon rider is, I think, very clever. Now, the one that Banachek and I sell through our magicinspirations.net is more of a thing that sculpts to and fits on your thumb that will fit to any and conform to any finger or thumb of any size, man, woman, or child. Similarly, this is something that can fit for anyone also. It does not have a contoured surface. It's something that is a flat surface, and it comes with the, of course, the gimmick that you need and a couple of pins, because the one of the advantages of this is a rider using ink, as opposed to what we sell, which has a China marker, basically, which leaves a larger kind of an image that you can see more from a distance or from a stage, short distance from a stage. Whereas, again, this is really more for a close-up, more intimate type of things. A lot of times you see these band riders, nail riders, boon riders, all perhaps using pencil lead. This particular one uses an ink cartridge, and again, it comes with a couple of pins that will work perfectly for this because of the shape. Without going into a lot of detail, explaining the whole thing, it's not something that you can easily make. There are some real advantages on this particular rider that I do like. One is that it is metal, and it comes with a very small magnet that is a flat magnet that you can attach to a little box, or you can make your own kind of holder, I guess, kind of a thing, for this. So you can easily conceal it in your pocket, your coat pocket, your pocket of your pants, or whatever, and get to it fairly easily, and then have it come back off. It attaches with to your thumb with some some sticky stuff, let me just say. So it also can be adjusted to however that you wish. It obviously doesn't matter if you're left or right-handed, but the it allows you to kind of fiddle around with it. Well, I don't know how to explain this. So it fits to your thumb perfectly, even though it has a flat surface for your thumb. As far as trying to get it to adjust for the pressure that you like in order to make the secret writing with your thumb, then you can put it on either side of your thumbnail or whichever that you want. Again, kind of hard to explain without having to go into too much detail about the thing. I can only say I think that it's a very well-made product. It's it doesn't look like much when you get it in the box. Certainly. It has a link to a video, download the video, or you can just watch it online. The link is about an hour and a half, and as with other, I've only reviewed one other magicworld.co.uk videos, and it has the same low production quality. That is that I think they just put a microphone in a room, and it sounds like a hall, so there's a lot of echo or reverberation on that. They do have a two-camera shoot, but the bad part of this is that they really don't zoom in. They don't show you the details of when they are actually making the gimmick to explain it, and they try to do it, but not only, by using a second camera, but not only do they not zoom in, the hand is out of frame many times. So when they're trying to explain something, you can't even see it because it's not only not zoomed in, but it also just goes out of frame. So you just have to figure out what it is that they're talking about. Now, part of the beauty of this is not only the product itself, which is well made and should last a lifetime, I think quite literally, because it is all metal and well made, but also, well, I say a lifetime, you're going to have to replace the ink cartridge from time to time. That may be the problem, because in the U.S., this particular type of pen, ink pen that they use and recommend, the cartridge, may be kind of hard to find, but I think that you can kind of find something similar to that, and I think with a little bit of experimentation that you can find the right cartridge to replace it from time to time, or you can purchase this pen perhaps on eBay or again back from magicworld.co.uk or from your favorite magic dealer through Murfreesboro Magic. Now, as I started to say, one of the other things that I think is beautiful on this instructional video, which is about an hour and a half, are the routines. They do go into a bar, kind of show you what it's like as far as a real-world presentation kind of a thing, and how it looks and how that it impacts the audience, and I like that. And this is something, again, that you can kind of add to your routine or walk around. Doesn't take much as far as pocket management. It's carrying this extra little gimmick around. It's really cool. Another thing is that there's a PDF that comes with this as well. So when you go to the link that they give you, there's also a download of the PDF that you can look at on screen, or you can save your computer, your smart instrument or whatever, to look at it at your leisure. And there are several routines on there. So if you are not familiar with using a type of writer like this, like a band writer, boon writer, nail writer, you can apply these routines to whatever other type of writer you may already have, use, or like. There are some really good routines, really good ideas. I like them all. They're well thought out. They go into a lot of detail. In my case, more than I really need to. I mean, but then perhaps I consider myself more advanced in this particular area. But overall, let me just say this comes with a recommendation from the Magic Word podcast. I think it's a good prop. Again, when you get it, it may not look like much, but just spend some time looking at it. The video, that is, take a look at the PDF instructions for some of the tricks involved. I think you'll find something that will fit for you, just like this writer will work for you too. So again, that is called Epic Writer. And it's made by magicworld.co.uk. Next up is a DVD that was produced by Paul Romani, and it is called Impossible Box V2.0, or version 2.0, by Ray Rock. This, again, says it has brand new routines and moves, and it's also got walkabout and platform magic routines on here as well. Now, this is... The idea is basically a card box. I should say you take six playing cards and you can fold them and make them into a box. It's an old idea. In fact, it goes back to the 1890s, I think, when it was first published in a magazine. The point is that Ray has picked this up and has renewed it. It certainly is a classic. It's a cool little thing. As he says, you can actually travel anywhere in the world, and all you need are just some playing cards in order to create this little thing. It's more than just kind of a conversation piece, but he has taken this to another level with this version 2.0, basically, of doing a chop grip routine using no magnets. So that's the advantage of this. And it is something that you, if you can carry around some props that you can use for the end of the chop cup routine, that is, let's say, like in his case, uses a die, an egg, and a lemon or a lime, you can use that, or you can use whatever impromptu things that you might have that it's at the table. Let's say, like he had said, a dairy creamer or something for your coffee or tea or something like that, whatever that you happen to find that is hard and about, you know, the size that would fit inside the box. In the routine, he teaches you, or in the DVD, teaches you not only how to construct the box, but also then how to load the box and how to use this as a chop cup. Again, there are no magnets. It's just the way that you handle it, and it's a beautiful thing. I really like the idea. He gives you two or three different ideas on how to load the box, how to show the box basically empty, and to show that it's back then again. It's really pretty cool. Not only is this something that you can do in a platform, even a stage, I guess, type of situation, but even in a walk-around situation where you're working at a cocktail party, hospitality suite, something like that, in which that you're using people's hands as your table, basically. Now, there are several things I like about this DVD. Unlike the production quality of the one we just talked about from the one with Magic World, which was you know, I've already said enough about that. In this particular case, that Paul Romani has done a good job of putting this all together technically from the standpoint that he not only will show close-ups of what's being done so you can see exactly what's happening, he also goes back over and explains it then a second time from a different angle. Moreover, he has a couple of people to begin with that he performs, that is, Ray Rock will perform this in front of these people, you get their reaction, and then he shows them how to put the box together. Now, they apparently, both the male and female, are not magicians, so he explains it, and so it if you're a beginner, a rank beginner, it's easy that you can kind of put this thing together, and he explains to them in their hands how to construct the box, how to load the balls, and also the loads at the end and everything. So he takes you from start to finish as if that you're right there in a workshop with him. So I kind of like this workshop kind of a feel that he's got with this video. It's pretty cool. And then at the end, there is an interview that Paul does with Ray. Overall, it's a very good DVD, a very good idea. Oh, one other thing that I like about this as well is that, again, that all you need are just some playing cards in order to do this. And when you're finished, you can give it all out. So if, again, that you've just borrowed some objects from the table, let's say like it was dairy creamers or whatever else, you know, that you're using, maybe something else as a final load or whatever, you can just leave that with them, along with, of course, they're nothing more than playing cards. So by constructing this little box, that's something that you can show them how to put the thing back together after it comes apart, if you wish, or just leave it with them, and they can take that with them. So it's kind of a cool little thing that you can construct in front of the people that you're doing this walk-around situation, and you can see people at the end of the evening who have all these boxes with them, and they're going to take with them and take back home and explain to their friends kind of what's going on. So again, it's a cool little trick, something I recommend, called Impossible Box version 2.0. And that was by Paul Romani, and Ray Rock was the fella who teaches you how to do it. And it's all on that one DVD, and you'll get it in an instant. Pretty darn cool. Our final product up for review, I thought, would kind of be a little bit of an homage to our guest today. I thought the fact we had a really fine card and coin guy in talking with Armando Lucero, that I would review a trick having to do with pretty much pure sleight of hand, that is a coin trick that's released by Tango Magic. It's called Chinese Tweezers by Mario Lopez. What you get with this basically are ungimmick coins, but more importantly, what you're getting, of course, would be the link to the video. Let me explain the effect. Essentially, that you are showing it looks like a silver dollar, large American silver dollar, the old type of Eisenhower dollars or Morgan silver dollars, and you have a Chinese coin, the kind with a hole in it, and essentially that, and also some tweezers, that you, with the tweezers, reach through the hole and extract three coins, and then you vanish the tweezers, and then they reappear then again later. So it's a great little routine, and impossible looking from certain angles, which is the only caveat that I would say about this. That's the problem, is that you have to be very cautious of your angles. The idea is, again, that you are producing three large full-size silver dollars from this hole with these tweezers, at the very tips of the tweezers. So instead of pulling something out with your fingers and people thinking, well, he must have been hiding that in his hand, I mean, surely people must be thinking that from time to time. Here, you have these very small tweezers that are coming out of this hole, basically, from the Chinese coin, and you have full-size silver dollars that appear at the tips of the tweezers. A very cool presentation, and the video looks really great. The coins, again, that you're going to be receiving will be three full-size silver dollars and a full-size Chinese coin and a pair of tweezers. And, of course, then the link that explains everything that you need. And in this, once again, video quality is not all that great. It's just pretty much a one-camera shot. They do show a few close-ups as necessary. They go back and explain it a time or two for each of the moves. So it's very thorough in the explanation. The performer, Mario Lopez, is Spanish-speaking, and obviously English is a second language, but he does a great job, certainly better than I do with my Spanish-speaking as not even a second language for me. But anyhow, I think he does a very good job of explaining this, and you understand what's happening. And in his presentation, when he shows the performance, this is done silently. And you can do this silently as well, or you can perform this to music or however that you wish. I think that the ideas that he explains are well worth the price. And the Chinese coin is well made. The other silver dollars are just that. They're silver dollars. I assume that they're real dollars. They look like real dollars. They maybe have duplicates, but it doesn't much matter. The important thing that you're getting is the routine, as I said. I recommend this. I think it's a pretty cool thing. If you do some coin work, it is all sleight of hand, so you do have to be proficient in some of the coin moves that they explain. He doesn't go into great detail, but they're not overly difficult moves as far as some of the palming methods that everyone pretty much has in their repertoires already. So it is something I think that you can do, probably would say beginner to maybe low intermediate. I think that you can pick this up fairly quickly. It will certainly take some practice. It's not something that you're going to necessarily buy today and put in your show tonight. I don't recommend that for anything, anytime, to anybody. But I'm just saying this is something that would take a little bit of time to kind of work on in order to perfect and to watch your angles and perform this in front of a mirror for a while and kind of see it from different angles, kind of see how it works for you. Recommended with those caveats. Again, it's called Chinese Tweezers by Mario Lopez. All of these products reviewed here today are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies through your favorite magic dealer. And, of course, here on the Magic Word Podcast, if you just go to the link at the Magic Store, you'll see these and all the other products that have been reviewed over the years here on the Magic Word, and you can go back and purchase those. Well, what a fine and full podcast this has been. I hope that you guys have enjoyed each and every part of this. I just think it was just jam-packed with a lot of really great ideas in talking with Armando Lucero, and then also these three unique and diverse different kinds of products that we just reviewed. Great podcast, in my opinion. I hope you enjoyed this as well. And if you did, and you'd like to help contribute to keep this podcast going, please consider being a friend of the Magic Word. All you need to do is just to go over to the magicwordpodcast.com. You'll find a link over there that says become a friend of the Magic Word. You can watch a video to learn some more about it to help convince you. But gosh, you know, just spare me a cup of coffee each month. That's all you have to do. Whatever the cost, a cup of coffee would be, and just you can go to patreon.com/themagicword, and you can become a ongoing patron of the Magic Word, where you can pledge whatever amount that you want. And any and all donations are perfectly accepted, and also that you get some kind of cool perks as well. I've just recently added over there, so you can take a look at those and see what level that you might want to donate, and you can then pick up on some kind of cool stuff then as well for becoming a friend of the Magic Word. If you can't do that, I understand. That's fine. Thank you guys for listening week after week, and also at the Magic Conventions day after day whenever I update all these different conventions I attend. But if you can't, let me also suggest that if you do go to Amazon.com and buy anything from Amazon, and I'm sure you do, there is a link also through the Magic Word Podcast. All you have to do is just where it says the Amazon affiliate. I think there's a link there on the page. Click on that, go through that link, and by clicking on that, that will take you to Amazon. So therefore, anything that you purchase through Amazon, then they will help the Magic Word Podcast also by having a little bit come back to us. Anyhow, a full podcast today. Thank you guys for sticking around. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and follow your bliss, but find peace with what you have. This is Scotty out.